Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I would like to call the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors work session to order on this date of March 1st, 2016. And I'd like to note that our chair, Mr. John Michael Sheridan, is not present. Thank you.
Welcome to all of you. We're so glad to have you with us tonight. And we are certainly looking forward to the conversation and the fellowship. I'd also like to ask each of you to introduce yourselves and tell us just a little bit about yourselves. I'll start and I'll go this way. I'm Ava Pippen. I represent Louisa County on the school board, on the PVCC College Board, and I am a retired classroom teacher from Louisa County Public Schools, but I now work as the director of the Louisa Education Foundation.
I'm Debbie Goodman. I represent Albemarle County, and I'm a speech language pathologist.
I'm Stephen Davis, and I represent Albemarle County, and I'm the president of the Community Investment Collaborative, a nonprofit that helps folks start and grow small businesses.
Good afternoon. I'm Pat Buck, and I am President Friedman's assistant.
Good afternoon. I'm Tom Prue, and I'm the representative from Nelson County, and I own a small business.
I'm Fred Richardson. I'm the representative from Greene County, and I taught at UVA for 40 years, and now became a farmer at Greene County.
Hi, I'm Sean McCord. I represent Charlottesville City. I'm also a parent of two, and possibly soon to be three, PVCC students, and I work at the University of Virginia.
I'm Peter Kleeman. I represent Charlottesville. I'm downtown Charlottesville. I'm a retired University of Virginia faculty member and engineer, environmental scientist. Rodeo, I guess. This is my last year of being on the PVCC board. I'm delighted that I have a chance to meet all of you before I go.
I'm Bobby Popwood. I'm the Community Development Director of Louisa County, and I handle our economic development program.
Don Weaver, Louisa County Board of Supervisors.
Hi, I'm Valerie Calamantin. I'm the Dean of Workforce Services here at Piedmont Virginia Community College. A long time, 11-year resident of Louisa County, and a recent graduate of the Child Leadership Club.
And my name.
And
I'm her neighbor. My name is Steve Nichols. I'm the Louisa County Administrator.
Hi, I'm Gina Keller. I'm the Superintendent for Louisa County Public Schools.
Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Hudson. I'm the Dean of the Division of Health and Life Sciences here at Piedmont.
I'm Perry Johnson, a retired teacher from Louisa and recently on the Louisa County School Board.
Hi, I'm Cliff Hara. I'm Dean for Humanities, Fine Arts, and Social Sciences here at Piedmont.
I'm Kelly Harris. I'm the clerk to the board of the Louisa County Board of Supervisors. Lost my way there for a moment. I'm also happy to say a 97 graduate of Piedmont and a 1988 graduate of Louisa County High School.
My name is Patricia Eager. I'm a Louisa Board of Supervisors.
Margo Bruce, assistant principal of Louisa County High School, also a graduate of Louisa County High School. I'll tell you the year.
I'm Carol Carr. I represent the Louisa District. I'm the Louisa County School Board, and I'm also the co-director of the Louisa Leadership Development Program.
I'm Mosel Booker, vice chair of the Louisa County Board of Supervisors. I'm a native Louisianian, born and raised there. I am also a retired principal from Charlottesville Public School System.
I'm Jolene Hamm. I'm the Director of Institutional Research, Planning, and Institutional Effectiveness, and I'm a graduate of Louisa County High School.
Ooh!
Yep. And I also, through Louisa, I went to Piedmont Virginia Community College, and you guys helped me greatly in that way. So.
Hi, I'm Kim McManus. I'm Vice President for Finance and Administrative Services here at PVCC.
Good evening. I'm Adam Hastings. I'm the Dean of Business, Mathematics, and Technology here at Piedmont.
Good evening, I'm Jim Ross. I'm Vice President for Institutional Advancement and Development here at PVCC.
John Donnelly, Vice President for Instruction and Student Services here at the college.
And I'm Frank Gallo, and I'm the Fluvanna representative to the board. And I taught at Central Elementary School, taught at Fluvanna County High School, and have even taught at PVCC. Mm-hmm. And contrary to popular belief, I'm neither retired nor deceased.
That's a tough one to follow. I'm Frank Friedman, I'm president of PVCC.
I'm Rob Hodes. I represent the city of Charlottesville on PVCC board. I'm also a student here and I'm a partner with the law firm of Payne Hodes.
Thank you all. I'd like to turn the mic over to Dr. Friedman, who has a few words to share with you.
I might just point out that our mic's on the table, and if you are known for having a soft voice, you might want to make sure the mic is passed to you as you prepare to say something. If you're a big mouth like me, you probably don't need it, but others do. You might be wondering what you're doing here. Each year at the March meeting, the PVCC board meets with the leadership of one of the jurisdictions we serve. Since we serve seven jurisdictions, it rolls around every 7 years. So it's been 7 years since we last met with you formally as a leadership group for the County of Fluvanna. The basic purpose of this, and this is meant to be a conversation, you heard Ava use that word. This is not a presentation. I just presented to the Board of Supervisors just a couple of weeks ago in my annual update. This is not really meant to be a presentation. This is meant to be a conversation, and I really hope I will speak as little as possible, and our board members, your board members, will really carry the ball. The purpose here, from our point of view at Piedmont, is how can we serve Fluvanna County better? That's really the whole purpose. We are your community college. We want to serve your needs as best we possibly can. And we try to use a forum like this to learn more about your county, about your hopes, your dreams, your goals, your education system, your workforce development plans, your economic development plans, how we can serve you better. That's really the goal. We're not going to ask you for money tonight. That'll come later. But we really want to hear from you and learn from you and help our board develop plans for our college to serve you better. A couple of areas just to kind of seed your thinking. What can we do to work better with your high school? What can we do to work better to ensure that your students are going on to college, those who want to and are well prepared for college, and they succeed in college, whether they come here or go somewhere else? What can we do with your high schools to enhance and increase the dual enrollment program that is so successful, and looking at an early college program? As Gina knows, we're talking a great deal. We've been meeting with the superintendents, talking about adult basic education and GED needs of the adult population in our communities and what Piedmont can do to serve those needs. And that's an area we would really enjoy getting your guidance. How can we help you get your people to work? What skills do they need? What job opportunities are there? What's the situation of people on public assistance who might need education and training in order to qualify for jobs? And how can we help provide that for the people of Fluvanna? I talked with Bobby about your economic development goals and what you're trying to do with business and industry, and are there ways we can help you with that? So there's a whole host of areas that we think we might be able to be involved with you, and the goal is really to help you achieve what you want for the people of your county. I'm going to just mention a few quick numbers. Some of these I did mention to the Board of Supervisors just a few weeks ago, but just to give you some idea of what's going on now. Last year, 856 Fluvanna County residents enrolled in our credit courses. That's about 11% of our enrollment. Of that 856, 225 were in the dual enrollment program, meaning they're high school students and they're taking PVCC courses while they're in high school, and that has been a thriving and very successful program. Those students, since they are not charged tuition, if they were charged tuition, they would have paid us $220,000 last year. So another way to put that is the families of Fluvanna County got $220,000 worth of college credits that they can use pretty much anywhere through that program. This fall, that we just completed a month or two ago, 75 of your graduates from Fluvanna County High School enrolled here immediately after their graduation. And that's pretty much on par with about where we are each year. Of those 75, 35 of them had been in the dual enrollment program when they were in the high school, but 40 were not in dual enrollment. They came here to continue their education. Of those 75, 45 of them received financial aid from PVCC in order to attend. So it tells you something about their financial situation. And I'll mention two areas of concern to us. We might get into this discussion. We might not, depending on where you want to go. One is that of those 75 coming to us right out of high school, 43 of them enrolled part-time. Now you might say, so what's the problem? The chances of graduating if you're a part-time student drop almost in half compared to if you enroll full-time. Not because you can't graduate, but in many cases it's a sign of a lack of commitment. Think about it. They've been a full-time student all their lives. They jump from 12th grade to here, and boom, they cut back to maybe 6 credits, where 12 is full-time. A lack of commitment often leads to a lack of effort, which leads to a lack of graduation. And that's a concern we have. Also a concern we have, of those 75 students who came to us in fall, one-third, 24 of them, were not prepared for college-level mathematics and had to start in our developmental math sequence, which means they got to take courses and pay for courses that are really at a high school level in mathematics. And that is a real concern because, again, the chances of ever graduating from college are cut in half if you start in developmental coursework. So that's a concern we have. Just mention a couple other things about the students. The biggest majors of your Fluvanna students, the biggest one by far is folks who want to transfer. They're in our general studies, liberal arts programs. They want to go on and earn a bachelor's degree. In the career areas, the biggest majors are business and nursing. We have many Fluvanna students in our nursing program. Let's see. I guess that's about it. That wraps up kind of an overview of some of the statistics and some of the work that we're already doing together. And with that, what I hope to do is kind of fade into the background and let you folks talk about your county, your education, your issues, and how PVCC can work with you, and also obviously for our PVCC board to talk about topics we've talked about over the years and to talk about issues and to learn from our friends from Fluvanna County. So with that, I have quickly learned the hardest thing to do is to get the first person to talk, and the second hardest thing is to cut it off so we can have dinner. So who's going to be first?
The statistic you gave about not prepared for college level math, what's the norm around the region? What's the other counties have said?
Yeah, I should have said. Actually, FluVan is probably a little bit better than the norm. We're probably looking statewide at between 50 and 60% coming out of high school and needing developmental math. So for FluVan, it'd be at about a third is better than the state average, but still room for improvement.
Just by coincidence, I was speaking with Len Bozo this morning, who's president of the Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department and Rescue Squad, and he raised an interesting issue. I told him I would be at this meeting tonight, and he brought up the issue of SAFER grants, which are 100% funded by the Department of Homeland Security. And the way I understood this was that seeing as FluVanna County is spending about $600,000 a year for contract EMT services and is still sort of concerned about fire protection, what this Homeland Grant, Homeland Security Grant provides is that if you get volunteer firemen, high school graduates, into a program to become volunteer firemen, the Department of Homeland Security will pay 100% of their two-year community college program. So he just found out about this. It's very utilized in New York, as you may have gathered, Mr. Bose is from New York. But he was very interested in getting FluVanna County on board with this. It requires some grant work. It helps FluVanna County enormously because it will increase our volunteer involvement as firemen, and it helps PVCC get students without them having to actually pay for their education. And I don't know whether that should go to the board, Ms. Keller, or Bobby, or just who, but it's an excellent opportunity that perhaps we need to explore. This is from Mr. Boza, and he, of course, is available to give you more information about it if someone wants to follow through. Okay. Second one, Bobby, our curriculum committee is just approved today a career study certificate in advanced manufacturing. Now, it's not a degree program, it's a career certificate program with the goal eventually to expand it out to advance technology and manufacturing degree, associate's degree. But the problem we've run into is that we need employers, and it may be a chicken or the egg question, but if you have intimations that there is a high tech, doesn't really have to be that high tech, I believe you mentioned a brewery, and they deal with controls and certainly bariatric chambers, that we are more than willing to meet and work with you to make a program that would perhaps be more attractive to helping FluVanna get that type of business, as well as enabling us to expand a certificate program to the clean services. And that's the second one.
Dr. Freeman, it's Gina. I would like to speak to a couple of things to feedback on your concern with the math performance. Several years ago, and even with the help of fine administrators like Marco Bruce and James Barlow, people at the high school level, and a lady named Brenda Gillum, who's director of K-12 instruction, Brenda and I especially took some time to talk with our minority students. We targeted those students and talked about a couple things that we were seeing. This is my sixth year in FluVanna, and what I was seeing is, are the following. The first was that we didn't see a great deal of our minority children and students enrolling in the rigorous courses. And that to me is a huge red flag, because that preparation doesn't start in high school. That's when it should be flourishing. So we interviewed quite a few students. I did, just really informally, and just asked a basic question. Let me see your class schedule and tell me what you're taking. And are you interested in a governor's school program, dual enrollment, AP? What are you taking that's gonna really stretch you? And the long story short of some pretty anecdotal and some informal interviews was that the students felt that they didn't have the confidence level in math. That was the, and I believe research will show you the same. So what I wanted to tell you is that, and I think it's so important, and I let me just pull it up, I've got the data right here. From 2012 until 2013, 13, 14, 14, 15, the scores of a minority students in math go as follows in 5th, 6th, and 7th grade. 7th grade, I'll start with them. They had a 51% pass rate in 2012 on the standardized test. That's horrific. We know that. This last year, they were 70%. Grade 6, 75%. Last year, 90%. Grade 5, 50% pass rate. Last year, 87%. And so it is indeed a focus, not only because they need those strong math skills wherever they go, 2 or 4 year institutes, they need the confidence level. And students will tell you that is a huge piece of their risk taking, that they would actually take those courses. So I thought that you might be interested in this course.
And let me just say, that jives perfectly, I think, with the things we've been learning. The students who take advanced math courses right on through to 12th grade, they're not the students that I'm talking about. It's the students who avoid math, take the minimum, and oftentimes maybe haven't had math for a year or two when they show up on our doorstep. And I mean, we all know that math, if you don't use it, you lose it. And that's the concern. We've had some studies, and Jolene's working on them, comparing those who come to us with an advanced studies degree with those who come with the standard diploma, because there are differences in requirements there. You're exactly right. It's an issue more of what do they take rather than did they learn what they took.
In addition, I wanted to know, out of the 24 students, how many may have had an IEP or a 504? Because with the modified standard going out now, we were pushing a lot of those students to apply to a junior college so that they could continue on. So just out of curiosity, how many?
Yeah, we don't know, but if you would be willing to share that information with us, because that's not information we get, Jolene could give you the identification of those students. If you're willing to share that with us, then we can match it up, because we don't normally get that information. But again, you're right on target with the issues. You know, part of why PVCC exists is to open up higher education, in many cases, to people who never dreamed about going to college. And they didn't prepare adequately to go to college, and then they decided to go. And it's that lack of preparation and lack of confidence. You know, it's almost like we're a victim of our success. We're attracting these people, which is what we want to do, but they're not ready. And it's a whole national problem. This is not just a Fluvanna or a Virginia problem. It's a national issue with all community colleges.
First of all, I think parents discourage their children with math. They say, you made a C or D in math? That's fine, I was never good in math. I used to always tell my parents, stop telling them that. So, you know, we need to, I don't know how we do it, work on parents to stop telling them that math is so hard. I don't know when you're gonna use algebra. And whenever we can, whenever we can get in a situation, starting with the four-year-old program, let's get parents' mind programmed to know what masks the children are going to take. From four-year-old, move them all the way up to the high school. So that parents will know, how will I encourage my child? How can I? And then maybe they need to take some classes. Let's provide some math for some parents, too, to give them some confidence. And I think if we start working on that ground level, maybe we can turn some of this around. And then when we were talking about other problems, I see that people want to come to school, but transportation is the problem for the rural areas. Transportation. If we can get a joint bus, yes, but you've got to wait, you've got to ride 2 hours. Some kids will not, do not have the transit. They have to work so that they can get a little piece of car, and then they can start. So that's something that maybe the community needs to get involved in to help children get to and for what they really have the desire to go to school. Maybe one of these days we'll have a bus that runs out of Fluvanna County to here to school where the kids can have a safe way to get here and to get back home.
One of the things that I'd like to mention with respect to mathematics and the importance of it, Frank mentioned the manufacturing career studies that is just now getting to be implemented. I'm working on a career studies certificate in cybersecurity. One of the things that I'm finding, and I think it's probably true of a lot of the career studies certificates, is that these prepare kids and adults for very, very good job opportunities, but the necessity to have a math background, which is not provided in these structured certificates, is very, very important. I was talking to one of the professors the other day, asked him what's probably the most important area of mathematics for cybersecurity, and he said statistics. I don't know that you ever look at any of that in the high schools, but I would stress again the importance of mathematics in elementary, middle, and high school for good job opportunities that don't necessarily involve going on and getting a college degree as such.
Transportation is not, and I don't know whether you envision perhaps a computer database of available people coming to Piedmont, or perhaps there could be carpooling, or a database here at Piedmont where you might be able to link up with someone who is coming. Have you given some thought to that? I know you must.
No, I know that there's some carpooling, and so, but not, I haven't thought about it in that a wider span to really get a good program together.
For those of you that, I don't think you've heard of Washington, D.C. a lot, or spent time there, especially in the military, but if you're at the Pentagon, there's
14,000 people trying to find rides every day. Some drive, some take the metro, some take buses, and a lot take the slug lines. And that's S-L-U-G, and it's just people slugging off this line, standing there, and somebody drives up, and they've got a car in the front window that says Springfield or Loudoun or Fairfax. Now, I'm not suggesting we necessarily need the same slug lines here, but there are ways to implement that that makes it fairly easy and fairly safe if you kind of, you know, it's someone that's embedded through the school and you know who they are and have school ID and things, because there are lots of opportunities with people going back and forth like that. But that's how it was solved in Washington, D.C. with the slug lines.
So. Steve, who would follow up on that then?
Well,
for Piedmont and Fluvanna County, because, you know, I live in Fluvanna County and I know how hard it is to get here generally.
I would certainly be willing to have that conversation. Steve and I can start that conversation. I was just right jotting down notes even with school buses and federal regs, you know, that govern the regulations that govern that, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. So I think Ms. Booker's hit the nail on the head. So often when you have a student enrolling, and there are economic struggles quite often for that student. So possibly it's a level of commitment issue, as Dr. Friedman said, but I would venture to say that knowing the student so often is an economic issue. And so they take what they can afford, they work, and they take the next class, and they work, and then they're trying to make sure that they get there. So
there are a number of churches in Fluvanna County that maintain a bus or two for their services. I don't know if you could conceivably approach those folks.
An example, with a families running together, we have volunteers who do help transport families into the classes. They're held in the basement of our school board office. And so we've made use of volunteers. I would suggest that we look and we formalize it a bit more, because I do think it's possible. But the reality is a student has to know that bus is going every day, and that it's not a roll of the dice and someone gets sick and they can't be transported. And that's the reality of having people drive. We have a lot of, many, probably over 1,200 people registered to volunteer for the schools who also help us with the evening transportation of families. But I think thinking about it differently and having it more formalized, I think it's a really good idea. I'd be glad to be at the table for that.
Yeah, I'm going to ask our VP for Finance and Administrative Services, Mr. McManus, to join you too, and to look at transportation issues. We've never been in the transportation business, PBCC, but that doesn't mean we couldn't be if we can figure out what needs to happen and how to make it work.
But even connecting needs with resources is one of our primary jobs all the time, because we have a rich country with lots of resources, and we have folks with lots of needs, but it's just connecting those dots. Clearly, something simple as having a sign-up board for a ride share might be something useful that doesn't cause much effort, and you can connect students with students. In our case, it may be something that, if we investigate and find out there's enough need, maybe it actually is funding a jaunt run in the morning and a jaunt run in the afternoon that meet the majority of the students' needs from the high school, because people can get dropped to the high school and run.
Has there been any consideration of bringing some of the courses to the high school in the evenings?
We've talked, but we haven't made it happen enough, right?
We have talked, and specifically even with CTE, et cetera. So I absolutely think we're on the cusp of doing that. We have, I can speak just for our CTE people, I know Marco would say the same. We have full-time employees who would then conceivably work in the evening as well. That's a little, somewhat a hard sell, unless you get on a really good day. So, but seriously, I think absolutely we'll continue that discussion. We'll also look at summer courses and summer sessions where we bring and open the high school for adult learning. So some of the things we identified, because I believe Ms. Bruce was there when Ms. Gillum a couple others were talking, even just basic computer skills. We've had adults ask us, well, we have students who could teach that. We wouldn't even have to have an adult instructor who do some basic computer literacy. And then have, you know, other options. So yes, we've looked at it, but now that we've had our high school open, and I believe people are in more of a pattern, I'm not gonna name them, but I have three people, teachers, who are very interested in offering evening classes.
Yeah, and I think you'll meet with John and with Valerie and look at the possibilities there. Again, for the boards, 323 Fluvanna residents this fall were taking courses from us over the internet. That's obviously another way to try to overcome transportation and convenience issues. Now, obviously, it doesn't work for everybody. They have to have a broadband access, or else it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible. But that you can see how popular that is. I mean, over 300 are already taking courses that way.
I was going to say that based on some of the comments we've heard on the statistics, and just in terms of transportation, and looking at the general need of keeping people engaged in math, starting at an early age and continuing forward. I know that Piedmont has a STEM academy. Programs that run through sometime, but I would say that regionally it would seem that you could almost have, whether it's 1 day or 2 days or 3 days, a STEM academy, if you would, at PBCC, in which you are bringing these younger children in, not necessarily high school age children. By the time they get to high school, they may have already started to lose their interest, but keeping them engaged at kind of at a younger level, and obviously you have expertise and resources here that are expensive to type of budgets. And then having those programs in place and providing transportation around this program is probably a whole lot cheaper than schools trying to figure out how to fund teacher salaries to meet those programs and those needs from that standpoint. And I know that we always talk about STEM in the school system, and certainly there are more programs and more availability due to the fact that you have dual enrollment programs and AP classes at the high school level. But if you're not already on that track, you've already lost that track, as has been pointed out, you're never going to hit it. And you're already behind the scenes, and we know we're running into it in a month or a month. So that's an idea that I think would be worth exploring.
I think there needs to be some outlet for students to use mathematics in some fun and creative way. I think about the successes of marching bands and sports and other kinds of things that are somewhat competitive. If there's a way to have some kind of, whether it's clubs or some other way of getting students to enjoy using mathematics, solving problems in competition with others, and even PBCC could become a coordinator for a service area-wide event that students compete. I have a friend whose son is one of the people who's in this Bacon program, which is in Charlottesville, and went out to MIT and is controlling robots and the space station and other kinds of things. And there's just so much enthusiasm because they're taking what they know and using it for something fun and intriguing. And they have something to brag about. You know, I do this, I'm playing around in the space station. But there's a way to get people to, at the school level, to find this as being an outlet for their own learning and achievement, and whether it's solving intriguing problems. You need some creative people to generate competitive ideas, whether it's about planning gardens or how the appropriate trajectory to throw a baseball if you want to hit a target at a certain distance, these kinds of things. But that's something that would be fun, that would use basic principles of both mathematics and physics and some other things. And I just don't see those outlets. A kid who's interested in mathematics can't sign up for the mathematics team. But maybe if there is such a thing, you would generate a lot more interest and achievement.
And that was sort of my point on the STEM Academy.
Right.
So far, was getting
some of the students and parents about dealing with whether or not math is hard. Thinking back to my own time, it was a pain in learning the multiplication tables and everything, because it's memorization.
Yes.
And that does not seem like fun to a kid. Going on to higher levels of mathematics, in algebra, trigonometry, plane and solid geometry, calculus, one of the things that I found was that the more you work with something that can be intriguing, at that point it begins to become fun. And also becomes something that is not hard and intimidating, like memorization of multiplication tables. So maybe getting the kids early on, and maybe the parents early on, to understand that when you get to a higher level of mathematics, it actually is not just challenging, but it's also fun, because you're actually working with some things that you can understand on a hands-on basis.
What Peter just described, what you're talking about too, Bob, is project-based learning, which
now,
is...
what did you get, Mike?
What Peter just described at the Bacon Club at Charlottesville, and Bob, what you just described, is known as project-based learning, which is a pedagogical approach to how children learn. They learn by doing, they learn by give them a problem, and they will try and solve it. That's exactly what we're doing with the summer academies. I think, and we have to give scholarships for those who can't afford to attend. Like I said, we moved them out to Savannah because we had such a large number of students who could not participate because they didn't have transportation and so we moved it out there, and we had a successful last year was our first year doing that in the counties. And it was, we're doing it again this year. We're moving it around to other locations so that we can hit more children that way. But if there's something that we could be doing during the school year, you know, on Saturdays or after school programs or something like that, we'll be happy to do that. We've got this equipment, we have the software, we have whatever is needed in order to take these summer programs and do them year round.
Yeah, if I don't know if everybody from Fluvanna has the brochures for the kids' college and all the materials. If not, I'm sure Valerie will be glad to get those to you to help publicize and make people aware of the opportunities. But that has been a hugely successful endeavor. Just we've only been at the kids' college what, a couple of years, and. And how many kids do you have now?
We have over 1,500 last year. It's what's moving in our building sometimes? It's overrun with kids.
But
and
in Fluvanna, the parents have to bring them to school, to the program. Or they bus? Do they bus them?
We pick them up.
You pick them up, mm-hmm. Satellite
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, 140 students participate, and
I appreciate the work that Val has done with us. It probably took us 2 years just to plan it and then get it ready, but we transport our students and we take them satellite stops.
Mm-hmm.
So brought the students in. And we had about 140 students. The key though for us, which I think was so successful, was almost 50 of the students were disadvantaged children. So we did a lot of legwork. Working with churches, publicizing, knocking on doors, handing out at every ball game, there are many of us handing out the registration sheets and targeting families to say, yes, you can, let's get these kids in here with scholarships
yeah,
for students.
Right.
It's really important. But what Val said is also, with the discussion of math, what I'll say is it's a little bit of a generalization, but when you look at what the state of Virginia is discussing now, which is really good, even in their legislative or general assembly, looking at how we can come to a healthy place with assessment of our children. I will say, and it's not an excuse, but on behalf of our teachers, for many years, certainly 3 years back, et cetera, there's sort of been a strong hold on them and a little bit of hesitancy even to take a risk. And it's not that they don't get creative in a math class, but those students have to pass a standardized test, which doesn't again mean you can't be creative, but you're teaching, right, and then you know I've got this, then you're less likely to spend 3 more days really exploring, et cetera. And yes, we have Destination Imagination for students, that's parent run, and we work really hard to make sure the diverse spaces in those groups, but we can't really control that. The robotics teams, this, you know, 24, which is a really cool math competition, et cetera. So we have all those opportunities, but like Val said, our next step is to push in and push into the regular school day. I'm excited about what I believe is going to come down the pike from the state DOE. Won't necessarily hit us as much next year, but certainly 2017-18, I believe there could be quite a bit more flexibility and even some breathing room for a teacher who's teaching math that can explore and take some risks. And as cliche as that sounds, I know, I see our teachers, I know what it's like to be, to have that thumb sort of right there on you and even on all of us because we're evaluated based on those stacking scores. It's an important score, but it's not the essence of the success of our children. So we have to breathe some life back into the core areas in math. So my plea is write your legislator. As I do every Monday.
Dean Hastings, at our curriculum meeting this afternoon, Dean Hastings was talking about something that might really tie in with what Tony is talking about and Peter Kleeman's thoughts about making things fun, and that was the Formula One program. And I understand that when we talk about mathematical deficiencies here at PPCC, we're talking about fractions. But Formula One is more high-tech and certainly geared more for 15, 16, 17-year-old primarily males, but that is still a service population we need to focus on. Could you explain that in greater detail? I know you touched on it just briefly at our board meeting.
So, we have a very effective transfer engineering program where students come to us. These are out-of-sight excellent students with 3.5, 4.0 GPAs, top of their class in high school, who come to us for the sole purpose of pursuing engineering and transferring to another institution. They're wonderful students, but by and large, they are nose in the book, focused on the next place they're going. And in an effort to engage those students and engage some of our students in our group programs, our faculty member who has some experience with the Society of Automotive Engineers has started through our engineering electronics club here on campus, essentially a campaign to build out a Formula One race car as part of our program. It's the same sort of initiatives that you do in your schools to extend the classroom out into the extracurricular opportunities. And we've been really effective. In year one, we have over 100 students, and we do have a few females, not a ton, as you mentioned, they're most female. And all of a sudden now we have students who are saying, used to come to Piedmont to go to the next place, and now I'm happy that I'm at Piedmont making friends and being part of the community. I think we can take that lesson and apply it really to what's going on in current tech in Fluvanna and here at PCC. I love the programs that Val does, but one of her biggest challenges is that they're elective. The students have to choose to do that in addition to what they're already doing. My argument would be that we create connections that are established so that students do them as a matter of course. So that when students are in a CTE program at Fluvanna County High School, they are already, by definition, in a PVCC program that leads directly to PVCC from the high school. So that when senior year ends, and as we know, 18-year-olds, when they look around and say, okay, what do I do now? The default is not, I go find a job at McDonald's. It's, oh, I go over to Piedmont because I'm already a student at Piedmont, and now I'm going to walk right over there and take classes. That kind of work is work that we are engaging in with other school divisions, and I think it's ready to start doing work in that area with Fluvanna County. We've done a lot of work in the past with Brenda around CTE, but moving from a course-by-course alignment to a comprehensive pathway alignment that integrates mathematics and our CTE courses with what goes on with Val and the extracurricular opportunities, I think is a way to really build out a connected pathway from K-12 to post-high-school.
That every student, I don't care how young they are, they get a PVCC ID, and that stays with them for life. And we now are at the point where we have enough data that we can start seeing how many students started in kids'
to mention that you have a parent academy as well to really let them be involved. I think that's so important.
I think Adam touched on something that is kind of near and dear to my heart, and that's workforce development, using the programs that Valerie's working on, especially with certifications and that kind of thing, as being able to interchange with some things. If somebody decides they want to go on and get a degree, that certification doesn't allow them to have some sort of credit built into it. I think that's something that's missing from those ideas. Not that they're not great ideas. It's something that I think the state needs to really take a look at.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And Val is engaged with her colleagues around the state in trying to do just that. There's a great push now for industry certifications. Whether they're college credit or not, a lot of businesses that I have, if the industry says a person has mastered a set of skills, that's all they need to know. So what Val and her colleagues from the other colleges are doing is developing, just what you said, Bobby, a way to say, okay, if they have this certification, that counts as these credits towards a degree. And they're trying to match those up. Val, you might go into more detail, I'm just touching the surface of it, but that is a major initiative. And if you've ever heard the governor speak, I mean, he talks about that in almost every speech he gives.
And the governor speaks to my workload levels. what we're being pushed into is to offer industry credentials and align them with the academic programs so that usually when somebody wants to learn something, they have an interest in the subject. And what we're doing is teaching them the information, the knowledge that they need to have in order to get the job that they want. And as an added benefit, the next step is just complete the college degree and continue whatever the missing pieces are. And usually associated with that, usually your employer will cover the cost of tuition or financial aid if you're not eligible for tuition reimbursement. There's usually a bump in their pay when
they complete a college degree. So it works out so win-win for everybody. Maybe a topic kind of totally separate from education, but from an administrator's point of view, this seems like a really good discussion, a lot of fruitful things going back and forth, some good dynamics with folks from Savannah, and folks from lots of other counties. But I'm wondering, because I've only got two board members who actually were here or were able to be here 7 years ago, I'm wondering if this kind of forum would be better suited to newly elected officials each year because they come from different counties, different localities. That gets them a little bit of cross-pollination, which is always good for the administrator. But then the county administrator and superintendents maybe, because they're usually in positions a little longer, could come with those new members. So you still got some corporate knowledge, but three of my new members weren't here 7 years ago and may not be here. Well, of the five, it's unlikely that very many will be here 7 years from now. Not because they don't want to, but oftentimes people don't serve on local boards more than a term or two or sometimes three. So it may be a good way to cross-pollinate something between counties and get some collaborative efforts if you look at it from that perspective rather than just the 1 to 7 years.
Let me just shift the discussion a little bit while there's a lull, but we can always come back here. Adult education. School board members, superintendent, board members, what needs do you see to serve adults in your county? I don't know if there's a need for English as a second language, if there's GED needs. What do you see? Because we're in discussion, as I said, with the superintendents about ways that PVCC, which might get involved in those areas which we've never been involved in before, and we really need to learn if we're going to do a good job. So I'd like to just throw that open. I saw a lot of hate stocking over here, so I think you're ready to jump in and talk about that.
Well, certainly English as a second language is something that we had to terminate when we had our major cut several years ago. And we're still fighting to bring back some of those programs in their full form. That's always important. But I'd like to pick up on Ms. Booker's comment about the parents and their level of interest in understanding what their children are being taught and what they're learning and wanting to be able. I believe most parents are good parents and really want to help their child if they can. But really and truly, they really have to push pretty hard to get that knowledge that they can get to reinforce their children's learning in school. Plus, the learning that they're getting in school is now way beyond anything they had when they were going through their own education. And I just have to think that there is a population of parents out there that are craving some easy opportunity, not necessarily to enroll for a course for credit and you know, put in all of that effort. A certification program, something along that line that would get them basically speaking the language, understanding the concepts, not necessarily having to satisfy it to the level of getting a degree or course credit, but I really think that that's an area that we could begin to look at more creatively.
I'd like to suggest that we think about the post-robotic time that all these people who have jobs that we're training people for right now are threatened with being eliminated through robotics, whether it's medical care, even people working in the food industry. All the people who are getting jobs in McDonald's and Burger King or whatever are being threatened by all of those jobs that are replaced by robotic technologies. And so I have these conversations with my friends all the time, and the question is how do people find life satisfaction when they're not going to be finding it in their jobs, many people? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what the window would be that people could look in, or the door they could walk through. But whether it's just ways of combating the idea that people are not really valued in what they traditionally felt valued in doing, but finding a new way for them to find satisfaction in their lives through achievements that are not related to their job. Certainly in the short run until new jobs evolve. But I can see many people that I know, young people and people in my family who have jobs that are all being just taken away. Musician family members whose jobs are being replaced by automated technologies. And I think we're all feeding into that problem as what we do in the community college of training people to take away these jobs. So I think maybe we need to get back a little bit and find a way to pick up what's down the road. I don't know what's down the road, but we all think about it, and we all start thinking about how we can satisfy that need. And when you look at the suicide rates and other things that are going on in our community, I think it's because people have lost that feeling of participating in an ongoing and active society and not finding satisfaction in their lives. I'm really worried about where we're going in the next 10 years, 20 years. Maybe we can do something.
Actually, I was reading a report today, and the president's report on it, and I'm probably off on statistics, but they were somewhat staggering, that those folks that are earning $20 an hour under artificial intelligence and robotics will threaten their jobs. Mm-hmm. Somewhere around 80% of those won't have that job. And those earning 40, about 30% won't have that job. And so the disruptive displacement that's going to happen due to that change global society and how to find values, certainly going to be a question that comes up enough more often. And tie that in just to the general sense of retirement as we have baby boomers shift likewise, there's this tendency to want your children to do well and maintain GPA and move forward from that standpoint, but you're not comfortable as a parent, and you aren't able to provide the resource and the students behind, or needs additional help that they don't feel like they can reach out to the teacher. It seems to me that students at PCC maybe offer some sort of tutoring program for those kids. And again, it could be once every 2 days, or once or twice a week, or something along those lines, where kids can literally call in or do a video session with a tutor on their meeting they have. So the Khan Academy, PVCC Khan Academy, by ID. Because I think those parents aren't intimidated. If they felt like their kids were getting the right support, they might encourage them to continue in those programs.
Yeah, we have various clubs that are involved. We have a volunteer club and a service learning. That would be a possibly an excellent fit for them to take on. And there's also benefit to our own students because they might discover that they really like teaching.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
A for them. I'm sure that's how some first got into teaching.
We all know sometimes by teaching, you actually get better at the center.
It's a nice idea.
But further, not even just to those parents, but as Mrs. Keller hates the word homeschooling. but certainly there are plenty of homeschooling parents that may face the same challenges as they get into areas that are above their expertise. And so obviously you're offering coursework to supplement that, but that can be a good segue into that coursework, especially at the younger level, younger ages for those children. So.
This may be heretical. And I know Dr. Ross is getting ready to crawl under the table, but I mentioned this. But if math is such a problem, and it's almost insurmountable, it really is, and parenting is a problem, maybe we need to look at math in a different way. I have a brother-in-law who is an engineer, and I'm a liberal arts graduate. We sometimes communicate, but he does not use math. He uses an instrument, an implement. And if we on the curriculum committee have pulled math out of some of these certificate programs because the students can't handle fractions, maybe what we need to do is, because we can't do it with the parents, is to approach math in a different way. There will always be the math geek who just loves math, but the rest of us
can't handle it, but we
can handle an apparatus.
Yes.
And maybe what we need to do is to start thinking along the lines of, do you need calculus in high school? Do you need algebra 2? Or do you need to adequately know how to apply math? Going into robotics, maybe the ultimate robot as far as math is concerned, is a computer, except for those like Mr. Kleeman, who's an expert in math. And that will save the rest of us.
Yes.
Just throw that out there. Sorry.
Next slide. Okay,
so, recently I attended a workshop in Richmond. The product is called Success 101, and it talked about getting children excited about a career at an early age. So we're talking about middle school perhaps. And once that student, let's say nursing for example, they're really interested in nursing, this program, you also can earn a dual enrollment. You're talking about getting the kid prepared and ready for college. This kid can take this class also in the 8th and 9th grade. And basically what you're saying is, I want to be a nurse. And so you're going to be taught what it's going to take to be that nurse at an early age. So you're now, okay, I've got to make sure I study my science, my math, you know, whatever else that will go along with that program. And then from there, along the way, they write a 10-year plan. Along the way, they're going to change their mind. And they actually followed, I think it was about maybe 20 students when they first piloted this program. And all of those students ended up going either to the military, to a junior college, to college, and they not only attended, but they completed the program, completed the college. And so I have sent all this information to Ms. Gillum, because I'm like, I need some money, I need this. But it's true, you have to start early, and you have to decide what it is I want to do. In order for me to get excited about even attending class or going to school, if I know that my 10-year plan says I'm going to be, you know, a doctor or a lawyer, or just maybe I want to be a chef, I have some steps to follow, which makes the math, you know, look a little bit more interesting, right? Because you're looking at even though we have personal finance class, econ and personal finance class that students have to take, they're looking at it though at a different angle versus, oh, I just got to pass this course because it's part of the credit I need in order to graduate. But now I'm looking at it as, okay, I've got a life here, and I've got to have insurance, and I've got to have a mortgage, and so on and so forth. So then the student really buys into their high school. You know, it's not just attending class, but I'm preparing myself for my future.
Mm-hmm.
You can see I'm excited about it. And it also ties in English. So they have like a poetry book that goes along with the program, as well as a math book that goes along with the program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not just eighth or ninth graders, as everybody at PBCC knows. We're dealing with many college students who don't have well-defined goals, and they're bouncing through courses. But I think we all know, when you have a goal, it focuses you and motivates you. And those without a goal often are the ones who are most at risk here. And several of us, John, and several of us have been at some workshops lately, working with colleges, that we have to work with our students to set up those goals earlier. So it's not just your middle school kids, it's our college students.
Well, yeah, even high school, I went around, I think it was Friday, asking juniors and seniors, mostly seniors, like, you know, what's going to happen after May? 50%, I don't know. Or if they're going to go, they may be undecided. At this time, they don't know what they want to study. So, you know, I just feel there's a need for something.
And those students, we get lots of them, and they're at risk. That's, I tell this story a lot. You know, you go to almost any restaurant in this area, you get waited on by a PBCC student. There's so many of them working. And they would recognize me, and we'd start talking. And I'd say, so what are you doing? And they'd say, I'm taking some courses at PBCC. And at first, I really liked hearing that. And then I realized, no, I want to hear, I'm a business major. I'm a culinary arts major, I'm an engineering major. Just taking courses, oftentimes that means you're going to leave us with a bag of credits but no credential.
One thought that comes to mind, yeah, as you said, applied across the board. I think a lot of times in high school level, guidance counseling sort of, you know, left to the students to pursue it. I can go on about that, but I know the interaction sometimes can happen. But a lot of children and a lot of young adults don't really have an idea of what they want to do, as you pointed out. And they really don't want to be told by an adult what they can do. And so, in the same way that we have career fairs, we have career exploration days, which are peer group sessions in which people can talk about how they want to use and what they see and how the courses apply that they're taking. And maybe, you know, you break those groups into small subsets, or do we have students that are taking econ and math and something along those lines? And half a dozen of those kids don't know what they're doing, but a few of them are really on top of it. You break out that class or that peer group into little subsets and literally just run a guidance program through the kids, doing it as an, letting the kids talk about how they're going to do it, and saying, you know, here's ways that your classes you're taking right now apply to these fields. And then maybe that's in front of a career fair for
I tell you, the thing that opened the kids' eyes, and many of you may be familiar with Reality Store. It opens children's eyes. They get a piece of paper and they have their occupation and how much they make, and it tells them what they have to buy. They have to buy, tell them how many children they have, whether they're divorced, whether they're getting alimony. They have to get communication, housing, your insurance, pay your taxes. The only thing they may need to add is a credit score. They have to buy their car. And there are booths set up around the gym. I did transportation this time. And they have to take that. They know how much money they're making a month. And they have to go around and get those services that they need. And we do it in the 12th grade. We're trying to move it down to the 10th grade because it prepares them to know, this, oh my goodness, I didn't know child care costs so much. And it helps them focus a little bit about, I need to have a career if I want these things, if I want a nice car and a house, that I can afford those things. And the earlier we do it, we'd like to get it down to about the 9th grade would be good, and then do another course later on. And if we do a follow-up, so that the only disadvantage is some of the kids have a career which they're making $55,000, $60,000, and then you have others making $20,000. So the kids who are making a lot of money needs to go through the same kind of a program, making a little bit of money. Because when they make a lot of money, they sometimes just kind of throw money away. But it was one young man that came through, and he wasn't making but $25,000. And he immediately wanted to buy a car. So he came over, and I said, you don't have a home. You don't have groceries. You don't have anything. He said, I want that car. I want that truck. And it was a truck was 20-some thousand. But he had a plan. He was going to use the truck. He had his business that he was going to do. And then he was going to get him a part-time job. When he came back around, he had managed that money perfectly. I was impressed. I thought he was going to fall on his face, but he knew. But anyway.
I have a question, if I could. I was recently at a Virginia School Board Association conference in Richmond, the legislative conference, and at the annual meeting, one of the speakers was talking about the need for children as young as 2 years old, the keynote speaker, was talking about his experiences teaching children at that level, in second grade, for example, code writing, how to write code. And I'd never before realized that this was a skill that was considered to be critical, especially when we're talking about the new jobs that are going to be evolving in this new world that we're steadily, rapidly moving into. I'm just wondering, at the PVCC level, have you seen the need for that? Where does it come in? What kind of preparation are you hoping to have on that level?
So I was at the same meeting. Okay. I heard the same speech. It was actually pretty thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman, actually, I think he offered to pay for school divisions to have that done, if I remember correctly. We had a little bit of conversation. I'm with Charleston School Board, so we had a conversation about our monthly efforts. Coding is something that we do here as a standalone skill that we teach. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you probably do some workforce services. And then we do it up at a higher applied level for employment purposes within our IT programs. We do not currently offer a standalone programming degree or credential because we don't have the employment here locally that warrants that. However, not looking too far down the road as to what future jobs are going to look like, it is becoming more and more integrated into everything that we do. So I think I mentioned today in a curriculum meeting that we have people who are employed as HVAC mechanics. We're coming back and taking our electronics and coding and logic programs because the nature of their jobs has changed so much that they need to come back and get that training. We have not yet, though, although it'll be an interesting day when it happens, seen students who have been through a K-12 experience where they've been taught coding as if it was a second language.
Mm-hmm.
And that is definitely going to change the way that we conduct ourselves and the way that we operate, certainly at the university.
Well, at this point in time, are you finding the Flavanna students prepared to take on those courses? Or?
You know, we don't look at it when we get down to student learning objectives on a school division by school division preparation. We do know, however, that our students are coming in annually with a greater, annually increasing amount of technical expertise. What we find, however, is that that expertise often, actually shouldn't use the word expertise, I should use the word exposure. You see students have a high degree of exposure to technology, but not the theoretical underpinnings and the really applied technical knowledge that needs to happen for a course of study. So awareness is there, exposure is there, interest is there, but the ability to translate that exposure into high quality employment, fortunately, isn't there, so we still have a job. We still have something to teach them in our room.
We had originally planned for this to conclude right around 6 o'clock and then go ahead and break. I think we have some wine and some refreshments, and then Juan and his crew will be serving us a wonderful dinner. But before we break, I want to give everybody and anybody a chance. Is there anything you've been holding on to that you didn't say that you're going to walk away from here and you're going to kick yourself and say, gee, I wish I had said that? So I don't want you to kick yourself. This is your chance. Anybody have some last thoughts or ideas or things you'd like to say?
I do have one question with regard to the I want to say the dropout rates, but the correlation of dropout rates to the fact that they are not attending or fully enrolled in the programs. And I'm sure you probably got it, it's not reflected in the information you provided. How much of that is due to economics? How much of that is due to lack of direction? Done any surveys with your students in that way? And along those lines, if it's economically related, certainly there are grant programs and so on, but are there other more creative ways in which and I say this in part because you hear so much about the media, about how colleges have become unaffordable and the expense is too high. And we, you know, depending on your income level, you may think that $60,000 is too high, but there are a lot of people that may think that paying $8,000 of the modest fee of being fully enrolled at BCC is too high. So the question is, are there creative programs in which you can help guide students through that, and how much of a factor is that?
You know, we're aware now, and I'd say it's really just within the last 12 months, of this real difference in our success rate for our full-time students versus part-time. We've been engaged in a really comprehensive look at which of our students are succeeding and which are dropping out. Mm-hmm. And the entire Virginia Community College system is engaged in that study right now, because the statistics are very similar across all of the community colleges, because we attract a very similar kind of student. We know there's a big difference. We don't know down to the level you're asking why. Now, all those things you mentioned, we speculate. For many of them, it's got to be financial. We all know, those of us who teach classes here and we talk to our students, you know, 75% of our students are working 20, 30 hours a week or more while they try to take classes. That's not easy. And then it becomes a matter of priority and commitment. All of our faculty talk about, Cliff, your faculty talk about, students who don't show up for class because they had to work extra hours on their job. Or they have to change classes in the middle of the semester because their work schedule changes. It for many, it's a matter of priority. You know, when I was a college student, I was a college student. That's all I was. You know, I lived in the dorms and college was life, and after that was basketball and football. But, you know, for most of our students, they fit college in around life. And the ones who make success in college a priority, they obviously do better. and those for whom it's second or third or fourth on their priority list behind buying a car and paying car insurance, they're less likely to succeed. What we're going to do about that, I don't know yet, but we're trying to figure out how we can address that.
Just one thing in that regard, because I'm seeing some class myself since I'm working on trying to get a certificate in cybersecurity. I think some of what was said about having a goal, in other words, if you pick out a study course, and PVCC, one of the things they do have is courses of study where you know what you're going to be taking. If you don't have the time to take it all at one time, I'm going to spread it out over probably 2.5 years myself. But if you know where you're going and why you're going there, I think a lot of times that can take care of that problem. Some of it can be financial, and some of it can be work-related, but having a determination as to where you're going to go and what you're going to have to take in the process, I think will take care of a lot of that.
That goes back to that whole comment around guidance and peers and corrections. How you can do that. I mean, I think if you break down the numbers and look at that, you'll find that there are students who simply are working their way through college, and as you point out, they're going through so many hours. I know that applies to my niece who attends school here, so as you do that, and as you're in that program, the longer you're quote unquote on your own, the more likely you are that you might sort of go off in a different direction.
So yeah, and I'd say the one thing I'd say, like you mentioned your niece, there has to be an adult who says, keep your eye on the prize. Mm-hmm. You know, that part-time job is not what you want your life to be. Mm-hmm. It's a means to get to the end, which is a better life. You got to keep those priorities straight. And, you know, for an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, that's not easy sometimes.
Right.
And the kids who have adults in their lives who can remind them of those things, don't let the job overwhelm your schoolwork and that kind of thing, I think that makes a huge difference. And unfortunately, as we all know, a lot of kids just don't have that kind of battle in their life. And it would make a huge difference. But, you know, the nature of the students at a community college, since we're an open door college, we take everyone. So many of our students are the first in their family to ever attend college. They don't have the adults who understand college and give them that kind of support that they need. And that creates more challenges for us. But it's a challenge that we're really trying to work on, that we know we can make a difference. We just got to figure out how we're going to do it.
So I'm the one that's going to burst if I don't talk. I have found parts of myself in something everybody has said tonight. So I started here in 1988 as an 18-year-old, and I finished here in 1997 as a much older. So the 9 years it took me to get my associate's degree were followed by another 7 to get my bachelor's degree. But that master's got done in 2.5. I've worked full time most of the time. During those 9 years, there wasn't a year that I wasn't doing something at Piedmont. I loved my time at Piedmont. If you had paid me to stay here, I would still be here. These are musings. These are not any guaranteed thoughts. I was just here to be with the board tonight. But I love this place. I love this place. I'm such an advocate for this type of education. So it rattles just a little bit to hear we lose them or the success rates, because if you look at my 9-year tenure here, at various points in those 9 years, I looked like a failure, or I looked like you'd lost me, or any of those things are set. So that's there. As a mother of a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old, I have the two sides of this, looking at my child who's in high school, doesn't have a clue what she wants to do, and I'm okay with that. I kind of like throwing the world at her and seeing what sticks. My second grader was in the coding class at Central last year. She got that already. She's a really different kid, and she has a very different, already we can see the difference. So I'm a little concerned also with thinking that middle schoolers need to have any sort of goal on where they're going, because the pressure that these children are already under scares the crap out of me.
Yes.
So there's that. And then listening to access. How do we get the kids there? How do we help the parents understand the importance of that education? And maybe it's only the education to be able to do something with their hands, where their brains are involved, but maybe it's their hands that need to be working. So these are just lots of musings that I've had over the time. You all have been talking, and I've been sitting here making notes that I'll go back tomorrow and write up those in a minute. But I just think it is also important to hear from the person who did do this, who did spend many years here that I loved. Letty McDaniel was a savior because I hated math. And Letty McDaniel handed it to me and said, this is math and you can do it. And I went with her all the way through trigonometry. Finite was not my thing, but that was okay. So lots and lots of random thoughts were just thrown out. So I just, it concerns me when I hear these kind of parameters set on who's a success and who's not. Because you don't know where that kid is coming back from. You don't know what that life is. So I went to school full-time. I worked full-time. I went to massage school full-time, all at the same time. Don't ask me how, because now I get tired of thinking about it. And it did take me longer, and I love every single minute of it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not in the first one.
Motion to adjourn.
So
made. Second.
I second.
Did you motion and second?
No.
A motion by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.